The following is a January 24th, 2022 interview between The Blast Anarchy with Mike Tech Strode, a fellow anarchist and friend. Mike discussed how the process of community empowerment is developing through the local neighborhood association he has been participating in South Chicago for a few years. We hope this interview inspires people to see the different types of seeds of anarchism that are possible to sow by developing liberatory neighborhood associations across Chicagoland and Illinois and connecting them to the general effort for universal emancipation. If there were a title to this interview, what would you call it?
Start where you are.
Start where you are. Nice. Nice. So, we're going to talk about what's going on in the Neighborhood Association. But before we get into the actual Neighborhood Association, are there any like characteristics about your community that could help give context to what's going on? And you don't have to get deep into your neighborhood if you have like safety concerns or whatever. I don't plan on showing any video. Mm-hmm. If that helps to provide you with some useful information. If anything, I might just use the audio track, but that's based on consent along the way.
Okay. So I'm fine with, kind of naming the sort of neighborhood of South Deering. Specifically, that's the 77 community area. And then Jeffrey Manor is the neighborhood name. But some characteristics of this community is that it's an elder community, or it's a community of elders. Young people who do well from this community tend to move away, which has meant that, we have a lot of elders who remain in our community. These are 50 and 60 year families. So if young people do less well, or, they do tend to stay, but, effectively that means they just kind of hand down the house that's in the family. There's a lot of neighborhood and communal pride of people who have been longtime residents of this community. There is a lot of deep investment in, maintaining this community. And the historical nature of it is that, or character of it is that this is a World War II community, or a community that's developed for returning soldiers. And so it used to be a white community, which, went through the changes that many communities in Chicago have gone through, changing from white to black. It is an environmental justice community. It is only 2 miles, 3 miles, west of the sort of, the Calumet River, Lake Michigan. We are in the arena of the port. And, there are all sorts of, environmental justice concerns that are around. We are one of the communities that is serviced by the Southeast Environmental Task Force, in terms of, the environmental stewardship of the different areas. And that's another characteristic that's really important. Like, the environmental areas, the natural areas of this neighborhood are things that are very, very important to the community. Because we don't have, many gathering spaces, so the natural areas become a place of congregation, a place of community. We've got some really great parks around the community. So these are all characteristics that I find valuable and meaningful. And also it's a relatively quiet community. There has historically been, gang activity and other forms of social violence in the area. It's been tamped down as of recent. But I feel safe walking my community. I feel comfortable in my community, and I've been here 13 years, and so I want to continue improving upon it.
Nice. So let's talk about the neighborhood the neighborhood association. How it got started, how you got involved, and why this is ferment for a revolutionary process or the process itself.
The Neighborhood Association, I want to say it got started around either 2010 or 2011. But it was before the Neighborhood Association existed. There have historically been block clubs in the community, right? So you had some very prominent block clubs on 103rd and on other sort of interior blocks of particular in Jeffrey Manor. And there was also a historical organization called the Jeffrey Manor Revitalization Council, which also was part of the founding of this neighborhood association. And so the association comes into being as a continuation of some of those historical entities, organizations, block clubs, councils. It's a convergence, right? Multiple block clubs coming together, becoming one council, becoming one association, basically for the improvement and protection of the community. And then, effectively, this neighborhood association blooms out of that, again, somewhere around like 2011 or 2010, 2011. My involvement, I moved to the community around 2008, and I had been doing other types of organizing and community work around the city. And I was looking to do some of that work inside of my neighborhood, but I hadn't really found a place of input, a place or an outlet. The block that I live on didn't necessarily have an active block club, and so I was, kind of lost for how to get engaged. When I did learn about the association, probably somewhere around maybe 2013, 2014 or so. I started attending some of their meetings. They were meeting at a church at the time, and I started going to a few of their meetings, just kind of sitting in on their meetings over the course of about 2 years. And so I was the youngest person in the meeting. There are a lot of elders in the community, so I was a young person in the community. And there was one time where a young couple came in, and they came in and kind of came to a couple of meetings and then disappeared. But that means that I got taken seriously to the extent that I was willing to participate and offer ideas and provide feedback. But a lot of times that there was they were ready to move forward, and they were, and so I didn't really have an outlet for maybe some of the more radical ideas that I want. I mean, basically, that's what I'm trying to get at. I wanted to propose some things that were more radical, related to my time banking work and the cooperatives. But it wasn't time for that yet. So I continued to participate, well into the I mean, well into sort of the present. And it was probably around 2019 when I was invited to a conversation with one of the members of the executive team, and they said that they wanted to engage me as a board governance advisor, mostly because I had been there, right? I had been present. I had been, participatory. I had shown up to some of the gatherings. I'd shown up to some of the events. That's a long time. That's a long time commitment. I mean, that's at that point, 5 years. But hey, I'm already in the neighborhood, and I'm going to be here anyway. So yeah, that's how I got involved.
I'm wondering how this relates to when we were getting together back in the day. I know there was a time where a few of us decided, okay, let's try to build a tenant union or some tenant unions. Were you doing that around that time, like around the time we're going more frequently to the Harold Washington Library?
So around the time that so the Colonnette Collaborative launches in 2017, Solidarity Economy Working Group, launches soon after. Community Council Working Group launches around the same time. So I was engaged with the Neighborhood Association at the time that we launched that Community Council's Working Group, and I was I certainly saw, my relationship to the Neighborhood Association as a great experimental and practice space for some of the things that the working group wanted endeavored to do.
Cool. Do you see like an autonomous commune in the making? Like, what is are there federative relationships among people, even if it's just the relationships of people who participate? And it doesn't have to be an autonomous commune. If there's like another endearing term that you prefer to use, yeah, let's use that. What do you see? Is there a seed of something that's going on in the Neighborhood Association?
Yeah. So, let's talk about what it is already. It is a federation of block clubs, effectively, right? The reason that the association comes into being is because the block clubs wanted to exert more influence over the goings-ons in the neighborhood. So they, people who feel like their block clubs are beginning to dissolve or beginning to lack the necessary participation or gravitas, they naturally wanted to come together to have more capacity, have more influence, have more power to be self-determining in their neighborhood. I definitely wouldn't necessarily use the phrase autonomous commune, mostly because that's not necessarily how they would describe themselves, but it is a community of people who want to improve their neighborhood in marked and marginal ways, or over time, and so they are banding together to advocate for those improvements, and then to organize for those improvements, and then endeavoring to draw in additional resources to fund those improvements. I do see a community in the making that is beginning to be more invested in its own agency and in its own desire for self-determination. And so to the extent that those qualities exist in an autonomous commune, yes, then that might be something that might be present here.
Yeah. I noticed when I participated in a homeowners association a few years ago, that was something that the spirit of like self-determination growing, it seemed to be something that began to come out the more that the group had a more people sharing the work and more people coming together to share their experiences. And I had told you in a few weeks ago that one of the things that we began to realize when we started to do Neighborhood Watch was, and in this situation, the origin of it was Homeowner Association wanted people to help do Neighborhood Watch. Part of that came from the fact that there was some cops that lived in the neighborhood, and they just threw their hands up saying that, what problems do we have in this community? We can't solve them. It has to be neighbors to get together and figure out how to do this. And so in the process of dealing with, some of the harms that were going on to what I call peaceful society, which were not that big. I grew up in the poorest zip code in San Antonio, Texas. And in this area, the crimes that were happening, that people were aware of, they weren't a big deal. Just like kids being kids and, some desperate people. But along the way, yeah, people began to realize that once those issues were resolved, they began to realize that really the biggest concern in the community was the sheriff's department. and the way that they bullied neighbors. And as neighbors began to get together and generalize their experience, they began to see the pattern of and of where that of where the more serious harm was coming from. And of course, that stuff is not possible until people start getting together and are able to even trust each other with admitting stuff like that. But yeah, and it was fun, which brings me to my next question, which is the paradise of association slowly unfurling? Is it there? And by that, I just basically mean, like, do you like joining with your neighbors? Do you like seeing your neighbors? And do you feel maybe it's vice versa?
So let's maybe I'll revisit the invitation that was offered to me to be the board governance advisor. The question that prompted that was, "Hey, tell me about our meetings. How's your experience of our meetings?" Up until that point, there were for me a lot of rough meetings as someone who facilitates, and as someone who came to facilitation because I was having a real problem with rough meetings. I have a lot of feedback when there are rough meetings, and I don't like to offer that feedback before someone is, ready. So I was great. I was excited when they were ready for feedback on their meetings, and I had a lot of it. And I didn't anticipate that they were going to invite me, to be the board governance advisor. I was just giving meeting feedback, and I said, "Hey, like I would love to maybe facilitate some of your meetings and help you kind of improve the process there." And they said, "Bet, yeah, of course, that this that feels like a great thing." So for me, I do enjoy going to the meetings now because we have now we have a practiced and really. We have a template agenda, like we have a skeletal agenda, and all we have to do now before a meeting is plug the sort of updates and and activities into there, add some additional reports, and so we have an agenda. We know what's going to happen every single meeting, and it's allowed us to be for me, definitely more efficient and more effective in our meetings, but also I think that the participants in our meetings are getting more out of those meetings. So yeah, I am loving this aspect of the association that we are becoming, because now when they ask me to present on something, like one, I know the shape of the container that I'm going to need to present in. And also, I know that people are prepared when I do present that, oh, they always have a section in the meeting where they do new updates, and somebody's going to bring some new information. And so, therefore, I need to be at the meetings because this is where some new detail is going to come out about what is possible within this community.
And does that spill over to just like better friendships or new friendships with your neighbors? And are there any has does yeah is has it gotten to that point? If yeah, is there anything that comes to mind about how that might be positively manifesting, and maybe even any challenges to that?
I do certainly get a lot of compliments from the members of the association about sort of the meeting process and the meeting style. So the fact that I used to just kind of show up and be the young person in the chair with the bike helmet, and now I actually am a participant. Yeah, people want to ask different questions. If you see someone in the store or if you see someone on the street, they're more inclined to ask you how you're doing, because like, oh, I know you. You're from the association, or I see you at the meetings. So yeah, there is the possibility that maybe it's an encounterism, right? We are having these encounters in this association meeting space, and therefore we become acquainted, we become friendly, and we're better able to relate when we're in the neighborhood. Or if we need to call on one another, we're better able to call on one another and know, yes, I might have your back if you call on me, because I know that you are part of the civic fabric that holds my neighbor together.
Cool. When I was doing the neighborhood watch, it was cool getting to, because inevitably you learn about a lot of people doing something like that. I feel like I wonder. I did go to some of I did go to the homeowner meetings to check in on stuff, and I don't recall much from that because that stuff was a little more difficult. Because like neighborhood watch is fun. Like it was fun. It kind of felt like a club, and I remember one of the last times I went, I was trying chew, and I got sick to my stomach, but because I went to a cigar lounge recently and my friend got sick, and I remembered, oh, the last time I got sick from tobacco was chew, and I was on neighborhood watch. And you know, that process was fun. It was interesting. A lot of I remember one of my neighbors like, what are you, a Democrat or a Republican? And I go, I'm an anarchist. And he goes, huh, well, probably a Democrat. And I was like, no, not either, totally different. And he's like, all right, well, tell me what's about. And I'm like, and I explained to him, he's like, yeah, probably a Democrat. And you know, but you know, you run into stuff like that, and but it's really nice to come across people who actually do care. Like it's like we're so right now, like we're socialized to believe that we deep down actually don't care. But when people are presented with encounters in which they're given like opportunities to care, I found that like people actually do care. And even some of the more like conservative neighbors and stuff, like I found a lot of like positive experiences, you know. And yeah, so I hope to hear more about stuff like that developing in the association outside of it as a result of the work. So is there a long-term vision that you or your neighbors have for the community, for the association, or both?
I mean, you know, long term for the community, it's really just revitalization. So this community suffers the sort of blighted properties. It suffers from absentee investors and absentee landlords, you know, that are buying up low cost, cheap properties. We are not a community that is. We're not a community that's rapidly gentrifying, and we're not a community that is in imminent danger of like having a skyrocketing value. So effectively, what that allows for is that people can come in and buy up cheap properties, and you know, either sit on empty properties, or they can just, you know, not have a great concern with how they integrate, you know, people into sort of the property and care about the fabric of the community. So I mean, we are looking for in the association, I think, or at least from my perspective, this level of deep engagement and revitalization that builds the capacity of the community to have political self-determination, have economic self-determination, be engaged in the planning and design of the spaces around the community. I mean, just real, you know, community control and real sort of economic autonomy, and or at least that's my view, that's my vision. I think if I translate from what I've heard from my neighbors, right, they have a similar view. They might not use the same language as me, but all of them are looking to have improvement of the housing stock and get to know their neighbors and feel like they want a community that's and feel like they have real safety in their community. Feel like people care about investing in their community in a way that respects the people who are already there, right? So I think those are things that are sort of the long-term vision that I've heard in the course of these association meetings, and they kind of they align, you know, in some ways with the sort of long-term vision of the association for a self-determined community.
I remember in the community that I was in, where I participated in the homeowners association and in the neighborhood watch, one of the things that kind of brought me down was how on the various social media the neighbors connected to, it seemed like the thing that people cared about most was property value. Like, what are we doing in the neighborhood that's or what are others doing in the neighborhood that's increasing or decreasing our property value? It sounds like your neighborhood's very different from that. So when y'all are talking about increasing the housing stock, what are y'all thinking about? Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I've never heard anyone talk about their property values. And you know, the sort of the allegory I'll give for that, or the story I'll tell of that, is that when I bought my house in 2008, you know, I mean, I bought it at 114,000. I mean, 2 years later, I think it went down to probably 37,000 or something like that in the valuation of the speculative property market. No one lives in Jeffrey Manor necessarily because they are concerned about like having a stable property value. They live here because they love the community, or because they have been here for a long time, or because they want, you know, quiet, out of the way community in the city. You know, I don't really hear that type of conversation when we're talking about revitalizing the housing stock. I mean, two houses down from me is a house that's been abandoned since 2009, you know. I mean, in some cases, you know, eventually they just kind of knock the house down because it's been empty so long that it's uninhabitable. But you know, I would love to imagine the possibility that, you know, that those things could exist inside of a community land trust for this neighborhood and for this community. So that they are protected from speculative investment, and so that they are protected from just ongoing deterioration. I mean, you know, when we talk about sort of revitalizing the housing stock, I think we are on the same page there. You know, just that we would love to see families and people, you know, move in, engage in the homes that are vacant. And that we would love to see a thriving community. So, you know, in fact, I think I would land right there. Like, we want to see this community thrive. And thriving looks like people who are going to participate in the sort of in building up a community that you know, gathers together, that, you know, sings together, that plays together, that, you know, congregates together, right? So, yeah.
It's interesting that people who are of an elderly composition are interested in these things, right? I feel like when I was younger, I had more exposure to elderly folks who were more involved. I feel like I see more in my experiences. I'm not generalizing. I'm sure that this is not the case, or But unfortunately, I see more grow as I grow older. I see more elderly folks who are just not as engaged or almost cynical, apathetic. Do you happen to know of any of the motivations of like your elderly neighbors in doing this? I know that one thing that comes to mind is when I was younger, I used to go to some environmental spaces more often. I noticed there's a lot of elderly folks. And I think one time I asked, like, why are there a lot of elderly folks here? And there was this somebody, a few people spoke up, and basically there's this consensus where it's like, we've been here, we've lived our life, and we're almost gone. But as you get older, you begin to care more about like what you're leaving behind and for future generations. And that was pretty nice to hear, because I didn't grow up with any sort of like outlook like that that was spoken. So I'm curious to hear like what is the motivation? It's okay if you don't know, but it could be a good conversation for your neighbors in the future.
Absolutely. No, it could be a great conversation. And I'm reading, I've got The Light of Freedom right now. And in there, I'm in a particular chapter where they're talking about like civil rights families, right? You know, where effectively they begin to look at a particular person who was very active in the direct action civil rights movement and how they got to where they got to, right? So it's like, how did this person become so active? And when they trace it back, they're like, oh, well, because their parents were active, right? Or because their grandparents were active. So similarly, the elders that are present in the neighborhood association now are people whose families were active participants in this neighborhood. One of our executive committee members is, you know, her father was very active in the association. And when the association was established, he came and he gave the history of like the other councils and block clubs that led up to this association, right? So the people who participate, certainly as elders, are people who are long time civic engaged folks. There is one particular elder, you know, who is on who is the sort of longtime steward of the block club on 103rd. And there's a bridge over there, right? And the state representative knows her by name, right? Because when, you know, there's a problem on that bridge, you know, when there's bad truck traffic, or when there's, you know, when it's not being repaired properly, or when there's a question about like, you know, what's going to happen with this bridge, right? This person is on the phone, right, to the representatives. So, you know, that's the type of engage, the reason that elders engage, because they've been engaged for a long time, because they know the people who are engaged. And, you know, it's not like we are busting open the doors with participation. So it's not like everybody in the neighborhood is here and present, but we have enough of a capacity that we can reach potentially all parts of the neighborhood through the people that we have in the room.
That's really cool to hear. We had one neighbor who we work closely with in the tenant union, in Tenants United, and one time I asked her too, like, hey, what's your motivation? Because you look particularly serious about this stuff, and she was like, well, it boiled down to like my grandma was a Black Panther, you know. Like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you know, it's like all this stuff, like this is the boring stuff that's not on the like the front cover of a lot of things, but this is the stuff that a lot of that's why she was she said, yeah, this is like the stuff that's like that doesn't receive all the accolades, but it's like this boring stuff that was really important for her ancestors. Yeah, so that was pretty cool to find out. And this neighbor, like, I don't think you're gonna find them in a chapter of like something radical, right? Modern radical thing. But there are like a lot of people out there who are like connected to serious things that happened in the recent past or further in the past. They're busy at work. If there were, you know, it's interesting. It's great to hear that y'all want to see a thriving community, and that you that y'all are having issue with this like idea of the absentee landlords. For sure, like in the tenant organizing that we've done or community building, I like to think of it as community building. I feel like organizing what? I don't know what that
Yeah, absolutely.
means, you know, like I like to think that we're building communities. But one thing that we see a lot is you know, it's a really ugly situation to be in conflict with someone like in your sanctuary. And there's times where it's really common where tenants, you know, they could stay in the building because they've won. And, you know, but it's just such an ugly experience that they just want to go. And so one thing that I do and I try to encourage others to do is to try to coordinate where they're going to move to next. That way they can be among friends or neighbors who care, who are going to be there to like prevent things from getting to that point, because you know, a lot of people they don't want to move. They want roots, they want to stay in place. And that's also what's needed for us to develop strong communities, is giving people that real choice to stay. And yeah, I just see like what y'all are building here is so important, I think, for helping to turn a lot of these losses in tenant union community building into victories. Because there are tenants who, you know, sometimes like the experience is so messed up and they don't have anybody. Like some tenants, they'll flee to another state to go to a support system. But sometimes tenants don't have anything. They don't have anyone, locally or in the country. And you know, if there were more neighborhood associations like this who had this like pro-tenant stance, I think that would be a really important asset for community building. Because yeah, there are tenants who the idea of like, oh, there are people who like might have my back, you know, that's it's a new idea. Like they might be there when I get there. And my goal is to make that a general thing, not a new idea. But yeah, if there were tenants or people looking to live in your community and participate in what you're doing, do you think they should move into your hood? If yeah, what should people be mindful of to not harm your community or the community that you're part of?
Yeah. So one thing I would say is that we are not beyond the sort of homeowners association dynamic. There's still language that shows up in the meeting where folks are like, you know, those renters and, you know, the homeowners and their renters. And I personally have to actively push back for myself, right? So I want to reiterate and reaffirm that, like, you know, it's important to recognize that these are political spaces just as any space. And so if you are going to participate in them, just be prepared to advocate for your political view, and also recognize that we are all evolving at different, you know, different paces, right? To different opinions and to different perspectives. So you want to go into these spaces just being prepared to wrestle with the political dynamics of that space. So I have it's taken me time to build the level of trust where I could introduce the dynamic that, hey, you know, we sometimes use anti-renter language in this meeting. We should probably like rethink that, because if someone was in this meeting who wanted to participate in building this community and improving this community, and they heard that anti-renter language, they would just walk out. And if they walk out, it weakens the association, right? It weakens the power for all of us, you know, to advocate for our community. So I encourage, you know, the tendency that, you know, look, we are in solidarity here. We are all in a neighborhood that people actively, you know, prevent from accessing resources. So if we are as homeowners or as renters come together, then, you know, I mean, we can improve the sort of possibilities of self-determination for all of us. And so if folks are like looking to live in such a community and participate, then I would say that one important thing is, and we're trying to be better at the sort of introduction, but just, you know, get engaged with the association, right? I mean, that's one thing. Drop into the association, participate in the association. I am actively like advocating for an intake process for membership that asks the question, you know, to the effect that people are comfortable, like, hey, if you're moving into the community and you are renting, would you like to provide the name of your landlord, just so that if there is a challenge, if there is an issue with the building, we can make sure that we are providing pressure at the appropriate places, right? We don't necessarily want to be pressing on you, and you're someone who's renting and is not responsible for the space, but because we are trying to improve conditions for everybody in the neighborhood, and that includes people who are renting. That's the position that I take in the neighborhood association.
How could people do something similar in their communities if they find themselves to be in the position of being home buyers in Chicago, in Illinois? I think we've talked about this a little bit, like what are other things to maybe help people get over. So like I'm aiming this question at leftists, anarchists, abolitionists, especially those who don't want to talk to a neighbor who's not on the level or whatever. How do you think people should do that? Like, how might they start? And what are some things to, what are some ways to overcome, like, certain inevitable obstacles? And I might say a thing or two here as well. go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess it's researching the organizing challenge you want to take on. Now, I'm not going to, you know, pretend that like I did deep research on this neighborhood before I moved in. I moved here because it was the place that I could afford, you know, when I wanted to purchase a home. But I took the same steps that any other organizer might take to learn the landscape that I was within. Right. So, you know, once you're here, okay, this is where I am. Well, what's around here? Like, what are the sort of resources? What are the assets? What are the institutions that are important? You can either do that stuff after the fact, or you can do that stuff before the fact. But either way, you're going to have to do the research about the terrain that you are organizing upon. Now, if you are trying to do this in, and you know, I only know the sort of landscape here because I did the redistricting work, right? But if you are organizing in, say, Jefferson Park, and you are trying to advocate for a pro-tenant, you know, anti-absentee landlord stance, well, one, I don't know if there are absentee landlords there, but yeah, if you're advocating for a pro-renter stance, then you probably are just going to be running water up a hill. And, you know, I mean, if that's where you want to live, then, you know, you just need to wrestle with the fact that that's the work you're going to be involved in. And either you're committed to trying to change that and finding people who are allies who are going to help you change that, or you are not, you know, and you're going to move. I mean, I guess it's just really about people deciding what type of work they want to be involved in And if they want to be involved in a process that's easier, they need to research beforehand before they move, so that they can try to move the tendency of an organization that already that isn't so recalcitrant or isn't filled with people who are worried about their property values. Or they're going to have to move an organization that is actively fighting against affordable housing, you know, in one of these other neighborhoods, you know, on the sort of periphery of Chicago.
Yeah, and there, what do you think? Because I know I could talk about this stuff, like ongoing help. If anybody's curious about how to approach this, how to mobilize or work in like their nearest neighborhood association or homeowner association, you know, reach out to Tenants United, Soledad Angelina. I'm willing to talk about this stuff. I can talk about my experiences in this stuff. Is there any space where you're willing to talk about this stuff? Like if somebody wanted to continue the conversation about trying to see what's up in their local homeowners association.
Yeah. They can certainly, I'm trying to figure out the sort of, well, in any case, whatever, you know, there's a bunch of sort of information out, but they can email connect@colonetcollab.org. That's fine.
Cool. Yeah, I just want to make sure I didn't forget about how to help people connect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I feel like I'm reaching the age where a lot of my peers are accumulating property. They're becoming home buyers, and they're going to be in these situations if they're not already. And this kind of stuff is really overlooked. Right now, I know that tenant organizing is considered to be like one of the popular ways that a lot of radicals are trying to have a big impact. But I think that, you know, based on years of doing this, of doing tenant community building, I think that stuff like this is just as important. And I remember there's like 2 or 3 years ago where there was, I think it was somewhere in Florida where some organizers, they basically started participating like in a local homeowner association more because the homeowner association was key in evicting, getting tenants thrown out of the community. Because, you know, these can be terrible places, homeowner associations. So they organize in there and they put an end to that. Based on my experience in a different homeowner association, I could see something like that actually being really effective too, to help out, people who are in terrible situations. I really hope to see more people thinking about this stuff more, about how important, it is to get to know your neighbors, to try to consider going into some of these spaces and finding potential allies. And I know that some people might be concerned, especially if they're white, you know, they're going to come into like all these whack people, but depending on the neighborhood, you know, your a white person's discomfort with coming across like other whack people, might be less of an issue than the effect that that association can have on vulnerable people nearby that they might, you know, be assisting in making their lives worse, or they could be in a position to help them out. And it looks like your neighborhood association has so much promise and being able to help out people who are super vulnerable. But also, I think y'all just plain need it for yourselves, because just because you're a home buyer doesn't mean that you're, that you're totally safe. There's so many people just ready to dispossess you. I don't have much more. I'm hoping that in the future we could talk about the bylaws that y'all are thinking about, because that's something that It seems so boring, but a lot of like this the work that we're doing is boring. The boring stuff is important. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, so I'll make one comment and then I'll just comment on the bylaws. The one comment I want to make about your previous point around, whom you might encounter and what, positions you might have to engage. So a lot of when I entered the association, or in fact, still to this day, right, one really prominent relationship that is really important to the elders in this association is their relationship to the 4th District Police Department. They're part of they report out on our community safety report, right? As part of that committee, right? And one of the more prominent meetings that I facilitated, it was their what I mean, effectively there were three officers from the 4th District on that call. I've been very clear about my abolitionist politic in that space. But during that particular meeting, those officers said, "Hey, this was one of the best facilitated meetings I've ever attended." There are, and I'm saying this to say, right? I mean, just really to answer the contradiction of like, oh, wait, you got this abolitionist politic, but you're facilitating these meetings where these police officers are. I'm doing what I need to do to build the relationships that I need to build to introduce other positions. And the opportunity that afforded me was that, like, the 4th District has recently announced a new police commander. And this was, one of the members of the executive committee threw a note onto our group meet, about this announcement. And I just really casually responded, like, "Hey, I just wanted you to see this person's jacket from the Citizens Police Data Project." Now, I think the percentage was like 86% more violations than most other officers on the force, right? I don't know, but it was some crazy percentage, right? And folks were responding like, "Whoa, that's who we got? One of them," right? I mean, so these are not necessarily folks who have an abolitionist politic, but you can introduce elements of abolitionism into the conversation just really by informing people that this is data that's out there. This is important information that we should know, and we can determine what our strategy is collectively, right? I mean, and that's the other side of it, right? This is consensus, right? Consensus isn't like, "I got an abolitionist politic, let me go into this room and let me change your mind." Consensus is, "I got an abolitionist politic. I'm in a room and in an association with people who don't have the same politic. How can I make sure that they are aware of what the context of this is, or the constraints of this is?" And so, yeah, that's just like one really small event that occurred that's really important to me, because it's about me being in a relationship with people and continuing to share information into the container that, introduces my politics to the space, because I am a member of this community too. And my opinions and my politics actually matter too, even if they are different from yours. So, I mean, you just got to be prepared to like engage that. And over time, right? Over time, I can introduce aspects of community safety that I think will be more valuable than continuing to build this, to deepen this relationship with 4th District. What are the other things that we can do that can make us feel safe, that can make us feel whole, that can make us feel protected and defended in our community that don't necessarily involve deepening that relationship?
Neighborhood Watch. I'm gonna get back to it at some point. Like, it's
Well,
fun, man. It's fun.
yeah, and
You know the house.
Yeah, and on the bylaws thing, right? I mean, yeah, the bylaws did get approved, but yeah, to your point, like, it's boring, but it's scaffolding, right? This is scaffolding for an organization that has a succession plan which is that, you know, I mean, the original bylaws were, you know, assembled by the original body, and they were just kind of, you know, relatively basic. This is saying this is an organization now that has a structure that if every one of us like disappears, people can hold that structure and continue the organization if they want, right? And for me, that's the real importance of bylaws. It's just establishing like this has continuity and this is how it can continue by your participation. And, you know, I mean, there's a voting provision in there now. There wasn't a voting provision in the original bylaws to vote for the board of directors.
We're going to have that bylaws conversation. I got some good stuff to share.
Yeah.
But for clarification, Neighborhood Watch, when I did it, we kept the cops out, and I was working with neighbors to learn how to deal with our problems without, you know, inviting a pistol to your face. Because that's what the cops like tend, that's what they tend to do. Mm-hmm. And inevitably it turns into child rearing and all that stuff. If you don't go on a power trip, essentially, if you think about how can we do this within a way that's about love and care and giving people their freedom. Or allowing people their freedom. You brought up that database. Could we take some time out to just identify it? And I would like to just like, it's a moment to show some gratitude for the people who put that work up. 'Cause this is like one of the like you mentioned a really good moment where that database is like really useful. And it's like a tool that we could be using in our communities. But I just want to make sure that I put that in the article as a resource, because some people might not know it, or they might be like me where I don't consult it enough to be able to remember it when I need it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Citizens Police Data Project, developed by Invisible Institute. And, you know, it's, I mean, to their word, their tagline, it's a tool for holding police accountable to the public they serve. You know, basically taking a record of all of those police interactions with the public and combining those things in one database so that on any particular officer on the force, you can search their name and it will feed you back, you know, their jacket, their record, and you know, let you know, what the stats are, right? I mean, you know, the CPD baseball card, as it were. You know, and so who knows? That's actually an art project right there. Like, you know, what if you actually had like baseball cards printed for every single person? Okay. I'm thinking there, right? I'm getting a strategy.
Hey, thank you for, thank you for doing this. We're at like an hour, 9 minutes. I'm curious, do you have any time to talk about dual power and pre-configurative politics? If you feel that The Blast Anarchy has important content and you would like to volunteer or submit content to help improve the quality and usefulness of The Blast for the development of anarchism in our communities, please get in contact with us at theblast.noblogs.org/contact. Donate if you feel this content is valuable at theblast.noblogs.org/donate. Listening to The Blast Anarchy on YouTube supports editors and translators when people allow the ads to play and finish if they play, unless anyone wished to sponsor any articles, which is always welcomed. Thank you to all people who have helped to make The Blast Anarchy possible in ways small, big, apparent, or invisible, recently or long ago. Love and anarchy.